Sitz. Alles zum Thema Fahrrad bei Detektor FM. Präsentiert von Rose, die Bike-Experten.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show, Joe. Greetings to Fairfax.
Oh, thank you very much, Karoff.
Let's move back to the 70s for a moment, okay? Can you give us an idea of the atmosphere the mountain bike was born into? What kind of people have you been and what have you been up to?
Yeah, okay. So I was, I guess I got my first glimpse of mountain biking when I was in high school back in the late 60s, 1970s. And there were a lot of movements that were coalescing to give strength to something as off-road riding. For instance, there was kind of a back to the earth movement. There was interest in backpacking, hiking, being outdoors, and there were even a few other movements. One was kind of a pushback to the jet age or something, which more a retro movement, thinking about maybe the 19th century, and maybe that had an effect on finding these old bikes that we did find and really loving them. There were just a lot of things that lined up that made the mountain bike possible then. And one was sustainability and the very green nature of bicycling. And really that would that one aspect, the greenness of a bicycle and that you can get so far down the road with a bicycle, you know, being the most efficient mode of transport ever devised, that became the glue that held this later mountain bike movement together, really. It wasn't just any sport. It wasn't just a football, which didn't have many implications in day-to-day life, but the bicycle as a tool in day-to-day life was very powerful. And as many people came into the early days of mountain biking, you know, there's always going to be some that leave it, but there was the glue of the usefulness in the bicycle in the greater society that really helped keep us all together until it spilled out of our own area a few years later.
So you as a group, you were riding old bikes with Coaster Brake hubs down Repack, and at some point you made the decision to build something new. Do you remember the moment that decision was made, and do you remember the reason for that?
Yeah, certainly. The bikes that we were first using for riding off-road were the old 1930s, 1940s Schwinn's and Coulson's and other balloon tire bikes, which were the ubiquitous bike of those days. And when we found them in junkyards 30 years later, you know, we repurposed them for riding down our local hill, Mount Tamalpais, and racing down Repack, of course, by 1976. They weren't made for really what we were doing. They were pretty rugged frames, and Schwinn's were perhaps the best of the bunch. Even so, they were breaking under, especially the big guys. And being that I was doing this fat tire riding thing, this mountain bike thing, as much as anybody at that time, and also building custom-built road racing frames. They would come to me and say, "Hey, Joe, when are you going to build me a new frame?" When they come with their Schwinn frames in two pieces. I thought about it. And really, this whole fat tire thing, this was our off-road fun to road racing. In the summertime and anywhere from spring to fall, pretty much a number of us in our velo club, Tamalpais, our road racing club, would be going to the road races in Northern California and around the Western United States, racing, and then come fall for the winter time, we'd be riding up in the hills on these fat tire bikes, so we just needed to improve the machine because the old heavy bikes were breaking, and I figured I could make a lighter bike. So yeah, I do remember the moment. Charlie Kelly was probably the guy who was pushing it hardest. Larry Cragg and with Wendy Cragg, the people who took many of the photos from way back then. Larry was the guy with the Nikon who who recorded Repack, and then eventually Wendy Craig was doing that too. And we were so fortunate to have those photos available. Otherwise, people would probably be wondering what the heck we were doing back then. But those photos really bring it alive. But anyhow, the Breezer frames, I was one day Charlie Kelly kind of cornered me and threw some money in my direction, said, hey, if I give you $300, maybe you could get started on these frames. And so that's what I told him it would take. It was to buy the first tubing. I figured I'd make 10. I'd make 10 Breezer frames, and each frame, the chromoly steel tubing and ingredients would cost maybe $30 a piece, so that's what made the $300. And I figured I could get started at that point, and methodically drew up the frame and drew up a number of designs, trying to figure out the best way to do it, because of course it had never been done before, and I really wanted those first frames to be good examples, and I guess all 10 mm-hmm. are still writable today.
Where did you know from in which direction to push things? What was your plan then? What did you do differently?
Well, prior to building the first Breezers, I rode many of the old fat tire bikes from the 1930s and 40s, and came up with the one I liked the best, which was a 1941 Schwinn Excelsior, or what we called an Excelsior. It was actually a BF Goodrich, but it had the geometry that seemed suitable for the bike. So I replicated that geometry, you know, went from the curved tubing to the, you know, mild steel tubing to the chromoly tubing, all in pretty much straight lines, but with the same handling geometry of the bike, you know, same bottom bracket height, same head angle, seat angle, chainstay length, and as a starting point. And then brazed that frame together, lugless joints, because no lugs were available for those angles. So it's all built with lugless. And then, my frame, that was the only one that was painted of the bunch, but the other nine, I just had them all nickel-plated at the same time. And then built up a number of the bikes. Charlie Kelly built up his own. A few others built up their own. I built up a number of them just by using a lot of the parts that had been used, like Gary Fisher, heck, back in 1974 or so, put the first derailleur on a 26-inch balloon tire bike in Marin County. And even by 1974 or so, he had derailleurs on his bikes. And little by little, thanks to Gary and Alan Bonds and Fred Wolf and a number of the people back then, putting together getting European lightweight and strong parts like TA cranks from France with wide range gearing and Japanese derailleurs and Brooks saddles from England and parts really from all over the world. Swiss DT spokes, in fact. Mm-hmm. Magura brake levers from Germany. And those were the first Magura brake levers ever used on a mountain bike, on Breezer number one, in fact. And so we had all these good parts from around the planet. Most of these parts were on the clunker frames. And then when I made those first 10 Breezer frames, those parts were used again. But the Breezer was the first chromoly mountain bike frame that was built up from the get-go with all brand new parts. That was the first time you had a shiny new mountain bike. And it was really tough to call them clunkers from that point on, and so we needed to come up with a better name, because the names that we used for the bikes up until that point were like clunkers, bombers, beaters, cruisers, things like that. Usually it was kind of like, and that name, by the way, comes from, we didn't invent the name clunkers. Clunkers was a name that was used for old cars, old beater cars. You know, you can imagine the muffler no longer attached to the undercarriage and clunking on the ground as it went down the road. So these were the two-wheeled version of those clunkers, and yeah, we just spelled it with a K.
So just for the people who are not that familiar with the topic, if we say you build the first 10 mountain bikes, then we refer to the frames being built by you and combined with all the parts you mentioned, right?
Yes, that's right. I built all 10 frames And I built up maybe 5 of the bicycles as complete bikes.
Why have you had the machinery for the task and the skills? Have you been building a lot of bikes before that?
Yeah, I was. My father was a machinist. He had a business nearby in Sausalito called the Sports Car Center from the late 40s until the mid 60s. And he was essentially in on the ground floor of sports car racing in America. Like I was later with mountain bikes, and he was kind of the go-to guy in the area to get specialty machining done on engines, and also at the same place they had a body fabricator, you know, hammering aluminum bodies and welding together car chassis, and they could build a race car right there, and my dad did the engine work, and he was the Lotus dealer for Northern California and also sold Formula 3 Coopers. This is back in the early 50s, and he also raced cars and so for Jaguar, and he taught me machining, and I took a 2-year college course in machine and metals technology. Previously, I was going to be I figured I'd be an architect, and I'd taken many years of architectural drafting and engineering drafting, and. So when I got sidetracked with this bicycle thing, this new bicycle thing in our area, essentially, I really changed my life in that direction. And I had been building things since I was a kid, and it was just a natural thing. I'd learned how to weld pretty early on, and so having the machines, the lathes and the mills and the whole machine shop at my disposal, it was pretty easy to transition from bicycle pairing into bicycle frame building. And I had I was fortunate to have a local frame builder across the San Francisco Bay in Oakland named Albert Eisentraut, who had grown up in the Chicago area. And he was taught by the Waston family how to build frames in the late 1950s. He learned from Emil and Oscar Waston. By the way, it's a bike shop that still carries on to this day by the fourth generation in Chicago. But they essentially, they literally handed Albert the torch. And Albert went on to teach many Americans the European craft of frame building. I consider Albert Eisentraut the American Renaissance frame builder because he taught so many Americans the art. And when he taught me in 1974, that really changed my life. I've just been involved in bicycle frames ever since, building and designing ever since then.
Since then, mountain bikes have come a long way since those days. It's almost 40 years to be precise. Is there a certain characteristic of those bikes, of mountain bikes, that has been around ever since, that has been given from one model year to the other, and that is kind of like the spirit of mountain biking, which is in all mountain bikes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Well, it's definitely in the tires, the big cross section. That's what made a mountain bike a mountain bike. You know, it's a 2-inch plus tire. That's what allows you to go across those hatchet rocks and allow you to have all that fun that we have with mountain biking. It's the volume of the tire, and perhaps the upright handlebars too. That get your head up and to enjoy the scenery and of course control the bike. But it would be the essentially, the comfortable nature of the bike. You know, it's always had an attraction, of course, for mountain biking. But even when they're not ridden as a mountain bike, they're just good, easy, fun riding bikes. You know, just the general layout of the bike.
So,
and that carries on to this day.
What changed about the mountain bikes since the old days?
Yeah, well, they've become a lot more complex. They used to be very simple and easy to work on, and of course, with the modern technologies, hydraulic disc brakes, and we're coming into the electronic age now, and And one of the beauties of a bicycle is that it was so easy to maintain and to work on, because what you see is what you got. It was all right there in front of you, and very rather simple mechanical principles. And they still are. They still can be that way today, but they have certainly become more complicated and a little more challenging to work on. And not that it's really difficult, but it's just not as easy as it was.
So yeah, it's become a lot more complex. I'd agree to that. But when we talked to Charlie Kelly, he told us about one component of modern mountain bikes he doesn't want to ride without anymore. Do you have something like this as well? Something you don't want to miss in any case on today's bikes?
Yeah, I would say it's the... Well, aside from the big tires and the upright seating and the and the comfort, I will expound further on the comfort actually, and I would say full suspension. And yes, that is more complex, but I enjoy that trade-off there for a more comfortable bike and one that can climb better and descend better than before. Even with those bigger tires, the articulated suspension, I found very pleasing. But I was originally going to say the shifting, the derailleur gears. I'm very happy with how the gears have progressed. I think we'll see a lot more coming down the road. Maybe some vastly different kind of transmissions than you ordinarily see today. I know that plenty of people are working on alternatives to the derailleur, and I see advantages in some of these alternative methods to make a bike with less unsprung weight and maybe even easier to use and cleaner. That's one thing that I'm really looking forward to is a drivetrain that where you don't get your chain dirty or the transmission dirty. It's all enclosed. The future looks bright. I really look forward to the new technologies. As a designer, my eyes are on these things. I highly encourage people to work on these areas. I'll do what I can.
Joe, many people consider you the father of mountain bike construction. How do you see yourself?
As only one of the contributors. I guess I have my specific main contribution, in those first breezers. But really, it took many people for this whole thing to fly. What would happen here in Marin County could have easily been just another isolated occurrence, of which there had been many preceding it, people hadn't done it long enough to have the thought spill from their area, but in Marin County, of course, with Repack, it just things fell into place, and there was Charlie Kelly's contribution with Repack, which was essentially the crucible for the sport, and it was the magnet that drew people from all around Mount Tamalpais, from all the towns around Mount Tamalpais on a regular basis to share our interest and our love for this new bicycle and helped push it forward and helped push it beyond or out of our own sphere of influence. So other people were infected with our contagion and it just carried on from Marin County as ground zero right around the world. It was hundreds of people who contributed to this to really make this into the phenomenon that it became.
It's still a group of people, and well, it's a group that grew quite a bit. And right now, your bike is in full swing. And this time of year, there are many, many shows, and there are loads of new mountain bike models being shown to the public. And when you get to know about those new models, how do you feel about that? Are there any kind of father feelings you have?
Oh, well, to be honest, I it does cross my mind occasionally. I don't know. It's just I keep thinking back to when I was doing this originally, back in the 1970s, and it was all about having fun. We were having fun with our friends up in the hills, and it was more about the social side of it, just being out having fun with your friends. And we did. The technology part of it, or the new bike that came from it, just happened. And I don't know, maybe I just distanced myself from these things, but I'm very flattered when people come up to me and they want to shake my hand and they say thank you, and I usually tell them, I was just having fun. You know, it's hard to be thanked. I was just having a good time. How can I possibly be thanked for this?
But
I'm flattered.
Yeah, but see the great effects of people having a good time.
Yeah. And another thing, too, it was just the fluky nature of this. In a way, I mean, there was no, I don't feel like there was any great genius on my part. I feel that there was certainly a lot of passion on my part. There is no getting around that. I mean, there was a lot of passion for the bicycle amongst many of us in this movement. And like I said before, that's the glue that held it together, and that's what drove us forward. We really wanted to get the secret out of cycling, and even that aspect of it is not totally true with the mountain bike, because the mountain bike was a diversion from any plan that I had to get the secret out in America. It was a wonderful distraction, and it turned out to be what got more Americans on bikes than since the 1890s, and that it was embraced in Europe was just on top of that. I just couldn't believe that Europeans had anything to learn from Americans about bicycles.
Oh yes,
Europeans knew bikes all day long, and that they embraced the mountain bike was just icing on the cake.
But you know, we Europeans, sometimes we have problems with the fun part of it all, and that's where you guys come in. So,
yeah, well, I hope the fun carries on. It's just a bicycle is something that plants a smile on our face. It has a lot to do, I imagine, with its great efficiency, that you can go further. Yep. Furthest down the highway or down a trail for a caloric intake of any vehicle or anything in nature. It's the most efficient mode of travel known ever, and that's, I think, it's, we're always a bit impressed or a bit enlivened by the fact of how efficient the machine is, and that's what plants that smile quite squarely on our face every time we ride.
It's great you mentioned that, because most people know you for your contribution to the mountain bike, but you also introduced city and commuter bikes under your brand Breezer many years ago. How did that come, and why did that come?
Yeah, it came very early on in my life, actually. I mentioned my father being in the automotive industry, being a race car driver and all, but interestingly enough, and this is in the 1950s, he would ride his bicycle to work at a time when very few American adults rode a bicycle. And he rode in bikes, well, a number of reasons, but one was to stay in shape for car racing. He and his buddies would ride road racing bikes, European road racing bikes, in fact, with Reynolds tubing and fine bikes. So I grew up from an early age with this wide look of cycling. I'd see my friends riding on the sidewalk, and I didn't see any of their parents or few of their parents riding bicycles for any usefulness. There was a neighbor who did ride to the bus. So he happened to work for Standard Oil, which was interesting. And so I grew up with this idea that, wow, I'm having fun on bikes, and few people I know are, except for us kids, and it just became this an interest of mine, my mission in life, my purpose in life, to turn people on to this great secret, this great little secret in America, and I kind of just became the bike guru in the area, and then little by little it carried on until, you know, this transportation thing was always in the back of my mind, even when after the mountain bike came into my life. And then along about the late 1990s, when just about every maker on the planet was making mountain bikes, and there was still the great need for the social good of cycling, I still saw as quite a secret here. I thought, well, heck, I can repurposed Breezer as a transportation only bike company, and this was an American goal. It's not something I felt I needed to be selling these bikes in Europe, because in Europe there were these kind of bikes already, but in America they were almost impossible to find. When you went into a bike shop, there were just a bunch of naked bikes on the floor. You know, they had no real useful parts for every day on them. Yeah, they were on the wall, and if you could figure it out, you could put a good bike together. But because there was such a need for a useful tool in society like a bicycle, it seemed important. It was important to me to offer a fully equipped bicycle. That, you know, it's not even about riding in the rain. It's like, the roads might be wet. It's nice to have fenders. You might be caught laid out at night at a friend's house. It'd be nice to have lights. When you park your bike, it's not to, just like when you're driving a car. You park it. You don't. It's nice to have a kickstand. You know, a bike that doesn't fall over, like a car. You know. So I wanted to get into the business of making civilized bicycles for every day, and because that was the moment when I first had such a civilized bike. I had been riding bicycles all my life, you know, for transportation, and it wasn't until I had a fully equipped bike, and actually it was a Specialized Globe that Mike Sinyard gave me back in 1995 or something like that, where it just, the light bulb went off, like, wow, now I totally see it. Before, I was kind of limping along with a naked bike, you know, trying to make it work. But the moment I got on a fully equipped bike that had all these accoutrements that made it useful, that's when it dawned on me how useful a bicycle was. And I figured, and Shimano came out with their wonderful Nexus hub, the internally geared hub that shifted every bit as good as the best derailleurs made, and you could shift under power, which you never could before with anybody's internally geared hub. That's when I knew that I needed to do a line of transportation bikes, which Mike Sinyard had done in 1995 with a Specialized Globe. And for whatever reason, they stopped making it. But, of course, now many companies are making transportation bikes again. But in 2001, that's when I decided that I was going to repurpose Breezer to offer a better way to get around in America, North America, and we came out with a line of transportation-specific, fully equipped bicycles.
How involved are you today in the Breezer brand and the development of those bike models of nowadays?
Yeah, well, I sold the Breezer brand in 2008 to Advanced Sports International. They're the makers of Fuji bicycles and Kestrel bicycles and SE bicycles, and a parts company or two. And I'm still on as frame designer for the brand, and I still have input into the design of the bikes. But what I do now is draw the frames, and they take care of graphics and speccing and all those things. But I'm still here to offer my services in whatever way I can with the company.
It's interesting you mentioned that Mike Sinyard gave you this one Specialized Globe, and this inspired you to steer the Breezer brand in a different direction, or in a slightly different direction, because there's this rumor about Specialized buying one of your very early frames and copying it and developing the stump jumper out of it. But in the first series, I read somewhere that they mixed up the steering geometry, so the first stump jumpers didn't ride that well. True story?
Well, partly. It's a little around the horn. I gave my drawings to Tom Ritchie, and he made his first frames, so maybe there's some connection there. But more of the story, more of the truth of it, or the story I know, is that Tom Ritchie, you know, was the frame supplier for Gary Fisher and Charlie Kelly when they formed Mountain Bikes in 1979. And in 1980, Mike Sinyard came to Mountain Bikes, that was the name of their company, right, and bought four of the Ritchie-built Mountain Bikes, or the, you know, Ritchie was the frame maker, right? And I believe that one of those Richie's went over to Japan with Signyard's frame designer Tim Neenan, and to act as a model or a starting point for their stump jumper bike, which was made over in a factory there. So that's kind of the more of it there, and the stump jumpers have a lot of traits similar to a Richie, even the elliptical base to the C tube, etc. But the really important thing that Mike had was not only the vision for where this sport might go, but also the wherewithal to make it happen with his factory in Japan, where he was previously having his road bikes built. And, you really got to hand it to the guy when he doubles his marketing budget for that project and ran a whole lot of ads in the magazines that where a lot of Americans first learned about mountain biking. And that really propelled it forward and came out with a lot of catchy taglines, like, it's not just a new bicycle, it's a whole new sport.
Yeah.
Which really got Cannondale and Trek and others really realizing that if they didn't get into the game right then and there, they were going to be left in the dust. But you got to also hand it to Gary Fisher and Charlie Kelly for their seminal bike business. The mountain bikes was the very first mountain bike business ever created, 100% to promote the sport, and they did a whole lot to move the bike not only across America but in Europe as well before Specialized too. But we're all sharing in this. It's a pretty much an open model of business, and it was in the early days at least pretty much so, I helped Mike out early on, and he returned the favor with that Specialized Globe, and we carry on because of our passion for bikes, and it's not who I don't know. The important thing is that we get more people on bikes, ultimately.
It really sounds wonderful if you talk about those people, and we get this sense of you still being friends and being pretty close to each other. And how is it? Are you still friends with Charlie Kelly, Gary Fisher, Wendy Craig, Tom Ritchie?
Well, just about everybody. And most people are still around. Charlie comes by our museum, the Marin Museum of Bicycling, where the Mountain Bike Hall of Fame is today in Fairfax. And he's a docent. He'll lead tours through the museum, and other pioneers come in and do the same. Jackie Phelan is down there. I see Charlie Cunningham come in, and Wendy Craig, and many of the early pioneers. Most of us are still around here, and still sharing the love of bikes and of each other, and we get together and continue with the fun.
That says Joe Breeze, the man who built the first 10 mountain bike frames in 1977 in Marin County, north of San Francisco, and who lives and rides there until today. And he is a very important part in mountain biking, as we all have learned in this talk. And he is a very important part in our program as well. We are honored to have you on the show and to be able to talk to you. And we not only thank you for doing what you did, and we also thank you for being as open and as available as you are. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you, Giraffe, and Johanna. Thank you for your nice questions and your kind thoughts. I've really appreciated this.
Antritt. Alles zum Thema Fahrrad bei Detektor FM. Präsentiert von Rose, die Bike-Experten. Thank you.